Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 11 of What's It Like? My guest is Veronica Belmont, video producer, podcaster, extraordinaire. Any other titles you wish to add?
Video host, blogger. I like podcast extraordinaire, though. I'm going to use that from now on, if you don't mind.
Help yourself to it. What exactly do you do? I mean, you do a lot of podcasts, but do you go to the office, like, you know, Monday through Friday, and every day at 11 you do a podcast?
I used to do that. That was exactly my schedule when I was back at CNET doing Buzz Out Loud, actually. I would go into the office every day and record a podcast at 11 a.m. every day. But now it's a little bit different. For probably the only show that I do professionally that I consider a podcast would be Techzilla on Revision 3. And for that, we go in every Monday and I record the episode. Well, we spend the first half of the day writing the scripts and answering questions from viewers and people who watch the show. And then the second half of the day is when we actually shoot the episode, and that's usually around 2:30. And then we finish around 6. So then the rest of the week, I'm either writing scripts or out filming on location for one of my other projects. And then every other week, usually, Tom Merritt and I record Sword and Laser, which is my fun recreational podcast, I guess you could say.
Which is about... let's see, Sword and Laser, sci-fi?
Science fiction and fantasy, yeah. It's a book club and also podcast and discussion group.
What's the best thing about your job?
I get to talk about stuff I love every day. I work on 4 different shows right now, and I get to talk about video games and gadgets and technology and social media, all stuff that I'm passionate about in my everyday life.
What surprises you?
It surprises me how much work it is. I never intended to be a video host or video personality or whatever people call it. I kind of fell into it in an interesting way, and it's been very cool to see. I don't know, the whole thing progress, and it just keeps getting harder and more interesting as time goes on.
So, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be an audio producer. I went to school for audio radio production, and I wanted to be behind the scenes doing post-production, production, live sound, studio recording, that kind of stuff. So that was my passion. I loved music, and I wanted to work in that industry, probably.
And you went to Emerson.
I did, yes.
And you're listed as being a prominent alumni.
Really?
Yeah.
Who said that?
Well, they did, actually.
Wow, that's very nice.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Along with Jay Leno.
Oh yeah, Jay Leno. He is a very reluctant alumni. Yeah. He's actually not known as being very nice to Emerson. So I am not that way. I loved my school, and I've done some speaking with their social media classes in the past, and I would love to even go back and teach a course someday when. Eventually, if I ever learn enough, if I ever feel like I've learned enough in this industry, I'd love to help other people, other teenagers and college students get involved in new media in particular.
You grew up in, how would you describe it? It's sort of like a toy store?
basically. well, my mother was VP of corporate communications for Coleco. In the 80s. She started there. Oh, geez. She was there for years. And it was a trip being a kid and having a mom that worked for a major toy company, because I would get products before they came out, and I would get to like beta test everything before it actually made it into stores. I didn't know I was beta testing it at the time, but that's what you would call it these days.
Now, they did like Cabbage Patch, right?
Yeah, they bought the company that produced Cabbage Patch Kid dolls. And they brought them kind of into the fold. And they were actually, they used to be a leather goods company. Coleco originally started as a leather goods company in the, oh gosh, I can't remember the history exactly, but they moved into the toy business way later down in the line. And they did Cabbage Patch Kids, and they my mom actually worked on the original Apple II as well. Yeah, so she has a background in that also. And I think her hands are actually on the box for the Apple II. Seriously, because that's how they did it, you know?
Yeah.
And My dad was an engineer, so he designed products. And that's how I got into computers. He gave me my first laptop, and he was more of the technical side of things. And he always encouraged me to tinker and break stuff. And so I had, between the toys and the breaking, it was a mess.
It wasn't the Atom that you had, was it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The Coleco Atom?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It pretty much sunk the company.
Well, you know, it was innovation before its time.
It was, which is always a bad thing to have happen to you.
Yeah, but in peripherals, I mean, just people weren't ready for that kind of stuff, yeah. I guess. And then my mom went on to work in insurance later because Hartford, where I grew up, Hartford, Connecticut, was the insurance capital of the world. I believe it still is. And so it was a very interesting process. By that point, I was already totally sucked into video games, and you know, because we had a ColecoVision, I went totally nuts for video game systems. So yeah, it was that's how things kind of got started.
Did you have a large family?
No, actually, my parents divorced when I was two, and so I stayed in touch with my dad, but it was me and my mom up until the point where I was 8 or 9. And very, very happy childhood, though. We had a blast together. And my mom remarried when I was 8. And my stepdad is wonderful. And yeah, so not a large family. I have a younger brother, and that's pretty much it.
Do you remember your stepdad coming into the picture?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was interesting. I mean, I was so used to being just having me and my mom for so long, or at least, you know, during those very formative years. But I was also really excited to have, to have like a dad in the house again. It was, I didn't really remember what it was like to have that whole family unit because they broke up so young, and I saw him all the time, but it wasn't like, you know, it's not really the same. And he's just wonderful. He's always been there for me and very supportive of everything I've done. So it didn't really change things at all in a negative way. And I took his last name too. He adopted me. So that's where Belmont comes from. Because we wanted to all be the same family unit.
Did you have a particular challenge in school?
No, I was a good student. I liked school. I didn't love the people at school, but I liked learning a lot. I think my hardest challenge was probably, yeah, I guess my hardest challenge was probably getting along with people. I wouldn't say it would be a particular subject. It was more dealing with, you know, school, you know, bull crap basically. And that was, I went through a lot of that in high school. I kind of, you know, had trouble like relating to teachers sometimes and to other students, and kind of kept myself separate from a lot of that. But yeah, that was probably the hardest part.
How do I enter this question? You're very pretty.
Oh, thank you.
Was that an advantage or a disadvantage growing up?
I wouldn't say that I was that way. I mean, it's still kind of hard to, you know, I don't know. I don't always feel that way, but in high school, I think I did definitely not feel that way. You know, I dated and stuff, but I felt very like dorky and I was, you know, a part of the like alternative kid crowd, I guess you could say. I wasn't popular by any stretch of the imagination. Kind of a loner in that respect. So I wouldn't say that was at all, that was not an advantage.
So is it difficult to wrap your head around it now?
I guess. I mean, I am pretty happy with how I look now. I think I've grown into myself in a lot of ways, or gotten comfortable with how I look, made the best of it, you know? It is kind of weird that I work in an industry that gets pretty heavily focused on that.
Is that more common in the tech industry, harder for a woman, because it appears that your audience might be mostly men?
I think that's true of any, I think it's just because that's the demographic that we're kind of talking to in a lot of ways. I mean, technology tends to skew heavily male anyway. I would like to reach out to more women. That's kind of the thing that I really am the most passionate about is getting more women and teenagers and girls interested in technology and gadgets and gaming. And I want to make it a more hospitable place for them. I think it's starting to change, and I've heard gotten a lot of great feedback from girls about the shows that I do, that they watch and they enjoy them, and so that makes me really happy. But yeah, I mean, as long as people enjoy the content, how they get there doesn't really matter to me that much.
I always think of fame as having different levels. If you're the only kid with curly hair in the class, that's a type of fame. I'm an albino. I was the only albino in the school, so that was a type of fame. Oprah is at the other end, right, where everyone in the world knows who she is. How would you describe your level of fame?
My level of fame, that's a hard question.
Thank you.
You know, I'm definitely part of a niche, and I like that because I like feeling that I can still communicate with my audience and be close to my audience and get one-on-one time with them in a sense, because I can go on Twitter and reply to them directly. And I always feel comfortable doing that. I've never felt weird about talking to people who watch my shows or meeting them in person or, going to events and reader meetups and things like Comic-Con or Dragon-Con. If I ever get to the point where that's difficult for me and I don't feel comfortable doing that, I think it'll probably be to a point where I'm not as happy as I am right now.
In general, do you get a good reception from the people that you interact with?
Yeah, I think I've been very, very fortunate in my career. I get crap every once in a while. I think anyone who kind of puts themselves out there and is a little more public with their life will inevitably have that happen every so often. And YouTube comments in general are just troll city. But that's just the nature of the beast. You know, you kind of have to learn to not let it bother you and let the trolls kind of roll off your back a little bit. But I've been very lucky. I know a lot of women who do work in this industry and do similar things as I do, and they have a much harder time. And I'm not sure why that is.
And teenage boys can be really harsh in their comments.
Oh, they're awful.
Have you discovered new good tricks for letting it roll off your back? How do you process that?
I have a few different methods, and actually Tom Merritt and I have spoken at conferences about trolls in the past and how we deal with them. My methods are ignore, talk back civilly. Sometimes talking back civilly is a really great method of dealing with people, because once they feel like you're actually giving them the attention they want and they feel engaged with you and they feel like they've gotten your attention, they sometimes back down because they're like, oh, okay, you're an actual human being and you're talking to me right now. I feel kind of bad about saying that stuff I said. And then other times, just for fun and because it's really cathartic, I'll just say something really jerky back. That's the least one I do. But I called someone a disrespectful ass the other day on YouTube, and he was. And everyone voted me up and voted him down, and it felt really good.
Well, yes.
But that's a dangerous method. You don't want to go down that path too often, because it can spiral out of control pretty quickly.
So even when it's accurate, you might have to be a little more sage.
You don't want to tick off the wrong person.
Did you enjoy the process? You said you came to your podcasting in a rather odd fashion. Now, you went to audio training. Mm-hmm. So how did you get from there to being CoverGirl?
it was an interesting path for sure. I got an internship at CNET back in 2004, and I was producing webcasts and web content for the sites. Then my boss at the time was producing Buzz Out Loud, which was which still is their daily flagship tech podcast. Mm-hmm. And he was leaving to go to Oracle. James Hilliard was his name. And they needed someone to step in and produce a show. And so I was a podcasting fan already. I listened to things like the MacCast and CoverVille and Geek News Central and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, I can do this. This is definitely within my realm of understanding. I focused in new media studies at Emerson too. So I was,
is there such a thing as old media studies?
maybe at a journalism school, probably not at Emerson.
Oh, okay.
And so I took over the podcast and I got hired full time to work on the podcast and also to produce some video content for CNET TV. First Looks from the Labs, the series was called. I think they still do it. And eventually I started talking. I started turning on my boardside mic and actually interjecting comments in the show. And, you know, one thing led to another and I became the third co-host. And then my new boss was like, hey, you know, we're doing a lot of content for CNET TV. We need some more people to do on-air stuff. Would you be interested in producing and starring in a few segments? And so I wrote something up, tried it out, did my first on-camera stuff and enjoyed it. And it just kind of went from there.
We'll have more with Veronica Belmont right after this. A nudge, if you will. A reminder about the importance of health. And I want to bring to your attention CFIDS, C-F-I-D-S. It stands for Chronic Fatigue and Immune Dysfunction Syndrome. And it's a complex disorder that impacts many parts of the body. It's not just being tired, not the chronic fatigue part. It's actually much more devastating than that. My oldest daughter is about 3 years older than Veronica. And Katrina went to Nicaragua after sophomore year in Harvard. And she volunteered in an orphanage and came home with the flu. And that turned into an autoimmune disorder. And she has gone from being very active to bedridden. I remember her as a child. And she was an early walker. So I remember her watching her, 9 or 10 months old. And she was just toddling down the hallway. But it's difficult to describe the pain of watching your grown child toddle down the hallway. And now she can't even do that. Katrina's been sick for over 11 years now, and there's no cure for her condition. But there's new research on retroviruses, which gives some hope. So please, go to cfids.org, cfids.org, and click on donate, cfids.org. Thanks. So Veronica, for self-motivation, when you have to, how do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I guess I just have to remind myself how fortunate I am that I get to have a career that I love so much. And, you know, when the going gets tough, I said, well, you know, it could be a lot worse. And, you just kind of have to go with that. I have a family I love. I have a boyfriend I love. I've got a job that I really love. Well, you know, that came out wrong.
With apologies.
I love the family and the boy, but that is not an order. There's no particular order. So that kind of really gets me through.
Let me go to the other side. When you have to, how do you calm yourself down?
Calming myself down, that's a very good question, because I actually, when I was in high school and college, which is one of the reasons I had such a hard time dealing with things and dealing with people and being in that setting, is because I have really bad panic attacks. And I went through a long time where I had very bad social anxiety and couldn't really go out and do stuff or interact with people too much, or any kind of big project or thing that was kind of looming on my horizon just totally prevented me from functioning. And I still get that way sometimes. The social anxiety part has really kind of calmed down in a lot of ways. And I think it's because the internet helps me kind of learn how to talk to people and share and be myself and feel like people are cool with who I am and like who I am and like what I do. Yeah. And so that's actually been some pretty good therapy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But I can't, when I've got too much on my plate or when I feel like my schedule is spiraling out of control, I just kind of, I freeze up and I can't do anything and I get really upset and I lash out and throw things and, it's not pretty, but it's not a very good way to be either.
So it's a way of telling yourself that it's time to calm down?
I think that's kind of like when I get to that point is where I'm like, all right, you need to kind of chill out and reevaluate what's going on and figure out why you're so upset and what it is exactly that's making you feel this way right now. And then I usually just either, take a few deep breaths or I go do something else for a little while to clear my head. Usually I play video games. It's really kind of what I do to take myself out of the moment and have a little escapism for a while. and then, you know, come back to the problems later and look at them in a different light.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
You know, the first thing my mind went to was when my friend James passed away. That was the first time I'd ever had anyone that I was close to, you know, pass. And it was very tragic and sudden. And I think that was really startling and really made me think about, you know, what's important to me and what's, I don't know. It was one of those kind of turning points in my life where I was kind of like, wow, I really need to take stock of what I have and, you know, be happy and thankful for the things in my life and, you know, the people around me. So yeah, that was the first thing that popped into my mind.
When you are anxious about things, do you take control of your schedule more so than otherwise? You seem to be a busy person, so that seems like a hard thing to balance.
I'm a freak about my schedule. Like I rule my schedule like an iron fist, and I live and die by my calendar. And I've been, you know, Ryan, my boyfriend, has been trying to convince me to get an assistant for the past year and a half. And while it would probably make things a lot easier in my life, just the thought of giving someone else control freaks me out to the point where I can't even, I even had interviews. I even talked to people and was like, yeah, about like being an assistant. And it was just like, I can't do this. It's too weird. It's too giving up too much control. And if they mess something up, I would just totally wig out.
Do you schedule free time?
I have. I schedule like dates with my girlfriends and like sometimes months in advance. And they think it's really weird, but they've kind of started to learn that that's the only way that you know, if they want to hang out, and I do want to hang out with them, we need to plan something, because then that time will just get filled in by other stuff and then we'll never have a chance to see each other. Ryan always jokes that he never gets a chance to, that he has to, even when he schedules things months in advance, if I have like a shoot or a filming date come up, I'll bump him because I know he won't get mad at me.
Well, remember, because your job is really important to you.
Right. But, you know, it makes him sad. So I try to, you know, reschedule pretty quickly. Yeah.
Do you schedule time for playing computer games?
You know, I should. I've been very frustrated lately because I haven't had a lot of time to play video games, and but it's part of my job too. It's not just curricular for me. It's something that I have to do to stay on top of all the news and all the games that are coming out, so I know what to cover, what to talk about. You know, just staying up to date on all that stuff is a whole nother job in itself, in a way.
It's actually okay to take the time off and just play games for you too, you know.
Yeah, I'm playing. Lately, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, which came out, you know, all the way back in the fall. And I feel kind of silly playing a game so far after it came out, but I covered it for Core, and it seems so awesome. And I love Assassin's Creed, and so I was like, I'm just going to get it on Gamefly and play it. But now, then Dragon Age 2 came out, so there went that.
Oh, dear.
Didn't finish Assassin's Creed.
Got to move on, huh?
I haven't even touched Warcraft in 2 months. That's bad for me.
Do you play a lot of shoot 'em up games?
No, you know, I'm not a big first-person shooter person. The online multiplayer aspect is not appealing to me. I prefer games that are more like role-playing games or strategy games or, stuff like that is more my speed.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, what would you say?
I would say, you know, find what you love and go with that. Because if you don't love what you're doing, you're never going to feel fulfilled. You're never going to feel like you're doing something that is both appealing to you and also enriching to you. It's sometimes hard to make money doing the things you love, but you'll find a way. You know, you have to kind of find that balance between having a job that you really care about and having a job that can support you in your life. And it's not easy, but I think to truly be happy where work is concerned, that's kind of what you need to do. If you just find a job that, even if you're making tons and tons of money, if you have to go into the office every day, that's 8 hours of your day, you're miserable. And who wants to do that, you know?
My last question is to help me get better at this process. Think of a moment in your life that was a defining moment that we haven't talked about. What should I have asked you?
I think the defining moment for me career-wise was probably, and we did kind of touch on this a little bit, was pushing that mic button for the very first time on Buzz Out Loud and interjecting something that was smart and right and made people kind of notice like, oh, she knows what she's talking about. Okay.
Was that scary for you?
Yeah. I mean, I said it out loud in the studio, and then Tom was like, oh, that's our producer, Veronica, in the background. And then I pushed the button and said it to the audience. And I think that was kind of really enlightening to me, and it changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Personally, just kind of being comfortable with who I am. I think it's been an ongoing process, maybe not just one moment, but figuring out that, you know, the things I love and the things that I do that make me happy connect me to other people, and that I should keep going with that no matter what anyone else says, or, you know, you just have to do what you love and work it in life. I mean, it's the only way to be happy.
How old were you when you discovered you were smart?
I don't know if I've still really discovered that.
Still coming?
It's still coming to me. I'm still pretty, you know, I'm always going to be a little unsure of myself in one way or the other. I don't know. I don't really have a good answer for that.
I talked to a lot of people, and I would guess that you are a lot smarter than you think you are.
Maybe. Sometimes I surprise myself, and that's always nice.
Probably the first characteristic that I think of when I have looked at you on video or in your podcast is how likable you are.
Thank you.
I think that's a characteristic that is impossible to define, but also impossible to create. You just have to, it just is.
My mother would agree with you.
Well, how could we go wrong then? Huh? Yeah.
Well, you know, I just try to be, you know, I love what I do, and I love what I'm talking about, and I hope that comes across to people, and I hope they kind of relate to that. And if that's likable, then I'm okay with it. That's great.
Well, I want to thank likable, beautiful, smart Veronica Belmont for being with me today. Thanks, Veronica. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I had a good cathartic chat. Thank you. Have a good night. Bye.